right. Well, to save Noah from having to introduce himself, I guess I can actually get off my chair and do something. So the next talk is entitled The NASA Discovery Moon Mineralogy Mapper Imaging Spectrometer, Science Mission Overview and Instrument Laboratory Calibration by Petro, Green, Peters, and Maroulis. And talk will be given by Noah.
Okay. Thanks, Ryan. I, again, want to thank everybody for coming back to the session. And I should point out that, this is a talk that I invited Rob to give, and because of impending excitement on our team's behalf, Rob couldn't be here to give it, so I volunteered to do it. But really, I should be far, far down the list of people to give this talk. So I apologize if I stumble along at any point, but hopefully we'll be able to have some good conversations about the exciting things to come from M-Cube, the Moon Mineralogy Mapper. So generally, I'm just going to give an overview of the objectives of our instrument and the overall Chandrayaan-1 mission, talk a bit about previous measurements of the moon from orbit, talk about our measurement approach, how the instrument was developed, our laboratory calibration, give a brief discussion of the instrument status, and then give a brief summary, and hopefully have some time for questions. Okay. So the first and potentially most important thing that everybody is no doubt heard by now is that the Chandrayaan-1 spacecraft is scheduled for launch for October 22nd of this year, which is terrifyingly close. We have a launch window from the 22nd to the 28th, which means that potentially we'll start getting science data down at the end of November, beginning of December. So we're about to start drinking from the fire hose of M-Cube data, which is both exciting and a bit terrifying for all of us, but we're definitely ready. We've had some time to prepare, and we'll see the fruits of that labor here in this talk. So just a brief cartoon summary of the mission, overall mission for Chandrayaan-1. This is the spacecraft will be launched from the east coast of India, the Sriharikota Launch Facility on the Bay of Bengal, by a PSLV, Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle, the extra large version. They have a very good track record of launching satellites from there using this launch vehicle. It's not to scale. After about a three-day lunar transfer trajectory, we'll go into a 1,000-kilometer initial orbit. We're hoping that we can turn on the instrument sometime during our trip to the moon, a three-day trip to the moon, so that we can begin heating up this instrument to decontaminate it, so that we can start taking data as soon as we get into our nominal 100-kilometer polar orbit. Again, this whole launch to science orbit science data will take potentially just under a month. So we've got a little bit of time to prepare for a lot of data. And nominally, we'll be in orbit, that 100-kilometer orbit, for at least 2 years, at which time we'll hope for an extended mission. But first things first. So what are our objectives of the instrument and the mission overall? Well, we have two goals. I put the exploration goal first so I can get to the science goal second. Assess and map the moon mineral resources at very high spatial resolution or higher spatial resolution to support planning for future targeted missions. But our primary science goals are to characterize and map the entire lunar surface composition in the context of its geologic evolution. And we've divided up that sort of overall idea into several sub-themes, and I just list them here to show that we've actually thought about this. I'm sure that some of these will get dropped as we learn new things as we start looking at the moon in a way that's really never been done before. So this may get thrown out very quickly, but at least we've spent lots of time arguing about what to do before we change our minds. Our objectives, well, primarily is to evaluate the composition of the surface and, of course, their distribution across the highlands and, of course, also across the mare. We'll characterize the different types of basaltic volcanism, identify potential volatiles, particularly at the poles. We'll look at fresh craters as there'll be probes into the sort of pristine mineralogy using either large or small impacts. And, of course, identify concentration of, unusual, unexpected minerals. One of the things that we're going to spend a lot of effort is looking at things that we, sort of the unk-unks that Jack talked about yesterday. So we'll be looking for unk-unks across the moon. I don't know what the spectral characterization of an unk-unk is. We don't have that in the lab yet, but we're one of several instruments on Chandrayaan-1, so we shouldn't be taking a lot of, I want to give the other instruments their due credit. Of course, the other U.S.-built instrument, Minisar, is also flying on Chandrayaan-1, in addition to a host of other instruments, both built in India as well as some European colleagues. For some reason, I'm just fascinated by this RADOM instrument, which is built by the Bulgarian Space Agency. That was news to me. As well as their terrain mapping camera, which will do high spatial stereo images of the surface at about 5 meters resolution, which will be very exciting to coordinate observations with M-cubed as well. Also this MIMP, which is a small impact probe that was put onto the spacecraft at the behest of the Indian president. So that was a late addition, but it certainly fills out the robustness of this spacecraft. So we're one of a suite of instruments that will be returning data again potentially in the next month. So lots of exciting things to come from Chandrayaan-1. I should also just mention that our data will certainly be made available through the PDS, and I think there are plans that the other instruments' data will at some point also be made publicly available. So it's an exciting time for sure. We have several key requirements that we have to meet mission success criteria. We'll be measuring a spectral range from 430 to 3,000 nanometers with 10 nanometer spectral resolution and a very high spectral response function. And there's a bunch of other features that we have to meet. One of the other important things to note is that at 100 kilometers, we're going to have in our targeted, I should mention, we operate in two modes, a targeted mode and a global mode, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later on, but that at our targeted highest resolution mode, we'll have a 70 meter spatial resolution at the surface with our highest spectral resolution. So that's going to be a very exciting targeted data that will be coming down shortly. In addition to the global data, we shouldn't sell that short. That'll be available at about 140 meters per pixel at slightly reduced spectral resolution, but I guarantee you when you see that, you're not going to think it's, certainly compared to what we have, it's not spectrally reduced at all. So this is a figure illustrating the science targets that we've defined up to this point. My role within M-cubed is as the targeting coordinator. So I can talk about this a little bit in a little bit of detail because it's something I'm more familiar with. And you'll note a couple different things. One, that they're amongst the science team, people have taken many approaches to targeting, from very small postage stamps scattered across the lunar surface to, well, we're really interested in South Pole Aiken, so let's just target all of South Pole Aiken. I would say that somewhere in the middle we'll find a happy ground. We also have all of the polar regions are targeted, and I should mention that for the polar regions, every opportunity we're over the poles, we'll be taking measurements of those regions as well. Additionally, we'll be measuring Apollo 16 at every opportunity for spectral calibration purposes, as well as the MS2 site and a few other well-characterized surface locations. In the first about 2 months of the mission coming up, we'll be in what's called an optical period, where the lighting conditions are favorable for making spectral measurements. These optical periods last approximately 3 months, followed by 3 months of unfavorable lighting conditions where we won't be taking measurements. We'll be spending that time analyzing data to create future targets. The global data that we'll be taking initially for the first month or so of the mission lifetime will consist of about 115 degree, 40 kilometer wide swaths. I should mention that our swath width is always 40 kilometers. So we'll be creating long, as Carly likes to call them, spaghetti noodles, crossing and hopefully, well, and covering the entire lunar surface. Following the successful completion of our global data takes, we'll switch into this targeted mode, and initially we'll focus on several high value science targets, including those outlined in a paper Carly recently published, which outlines a series of international calibration target sites. And if you're not familiar with that paper, I'd certainly be more than happy to give you a digital copy. Just contact me after the talk. Anyway, so we're going to be getting, again, a great global data set and some key targeted data as well. And if there's an area that you are curious or would like to make sure it gets targeted, please just talk to me, and I'll make sure it gets put into our queue. And as a targeting coordinator, I can just bump it to the top of the list, and we'll all be happy. But it definitely is something that I'd like to encourage the community at large to at least contact me to inquire about specific targets of interest. I can assure you that we have all of the landing sites and many features, so hopefully we've covered our bases at this point fairly well. And nominally at this point we'll get 25% of the entire moon at this targeted resolution, and again 100% at the global resolution. So what has been done before? So this is a sort of a generated figure showing nominally what we saw from Clementine with the UV-Vis and the near-infrared data for a series of compositions. And this actually doesn't really make a whole lot of sense because the points aren't connected. But basically, this is a representation of the kind of spectral resolution that we got from Clementine at about approximately 100, 150 meters per pixel. Of course, we'll be doubling that in our target, or improving that by a factor of two in our targeted mode. Previous instruments have taken a series of instruments of observations in multiple bands, which are then overlaid to make an image cube. Whereas we'll be taking a much higher spectral resolution across the lunar surface at much higher spatial resolution across those wavelength ranges. And instead of the previous cartoon slide showing how other detectors have worked, we're a push broom imaging spectrometer, and we'll be able to generate image cubes in a single pass. Again, 40 kilometer swath, 70 meters targeted resolution, and about 260 channels per spectrum at our targeted resolution. So in the lab, this is what these compositions and these materials look like across our wavelength range. In our targeted resolution at about 260 bands, you can't, obviously, the upshot here is that you can't really see much of a difference between what you see in the laboratory spectrum and what we'll see in our targeted spectrum. Of course, these are nice, fresh lunar samples. We'll expect to see some features similar to this out to 3 microns. Notice that some of the samples stop short of 3 microns, and those that do go to 3 microns contain a water absorption feature, which we'll be able to potentially able to detect if there's any adsorbed water at the poles. And of course, in our global data set, we'll have 86 bands, so reduced spectral resolution, 140 meter per pixel spatial resolution. And I should note that we're not; these are not evenly spaced. These bands are not going to be evenly spaced around 1 and 2 microns. We'll have our essentially our highest targeted resolution across those spectral features, those spectral ranges, so that we can better characterize those absorption features, even in our global data set. So I think a lot of people will focus on the targeted data, because it certainly will be very interesting from a spatial and spectral resolution standpoint, but our global data will also increase our understanding of the composition of the surface of the moon by leaps and bounds. We're going to be also efforting to have very high measurement uniformity. This cartoon image of wavelength versus cross-track sample illustrates what a perfect detector and how the instrument should map the surface. What we want to try to avoid is some of the problems that I'll show in a little bit. So the instrument was built and designed at JPL using a uniform Offner imaging spectrometer design. And this is just obviously a cartoon of how light will come in from the surface, be bounced around, split into its constituent wavelengths, and then projected onto our detector. As the spacecraft passes over the surface, we'll build up images, image cubes. And it was designed by co-author Sakos Morales, who really should get a lot of the credit for the design and of this really incredible instrument, which again is a single detector, and that's a very important thing to note, is that this is a single detector. So unlike previous hyperspectral instruments, we won't suffer from some of the problems that they've had in terms of getting the wavelengths to match up. So very excited about what we'll see from this cartoon of what the spectrometer looks like. We'll see some real pictures of that later on. Basically speaks for itself. This is what the instrument, the mechanical assembly inside the overall spectrometer looks like from the outside hardware. This is the proud parents of M-cubed. I'll give anybody a free beer tonight at the Flying Saucer if they can tell me which one of these is Carly Peters. Excellent. I'll buy myself a free beer. Carly Peters, ladies and gentlemen, who you can barely see the smile through the mask. This is M-cubed, just after birth, and we're all very excited about it. Rob Green, I think, Rob Green is in the picture. Prove me wrong. And he also is the instrument scientist behind this. So we've got some very proud parents. This is the instrument. So this is where the light will come in. This is the passive radiator that will be keeping our instrument nice and happy. This is really what I wanted to get to. This is sort of a comparison between, and barely make it out in the green, of a laboratory measurement of neodymium target. And this is the red line shows what M-cube sees. And trust me, they're very exquisite Carly wouldn't want me to say match, but they're very similar, so that's showing that M-cubed will be able to take very, very high quality spectra of the surface of the moon. Again, across from 4 microns, or nominally 400 nanometers, 430 nanometers, out to 3 microns. When we saw this, we were all very excited. So we, again, owe a lot of credit to the team that built this at JPL. So just to remind you of some of the calibration requirements that we have to have, we have to obviously cover the spectral range that we've described there and know the position of each spectral band within 10% of our full width half max. And I'll just point that out in some of these slides coming up. This is essentially just a nice representation of the various bands across from 2,000 to 2,200 nanometers, or to that number. Each of the bands is represented by approximately by a Gaussian, which means that we'll get a nice spectral response for each of our bands. So this is very exciting. I was talking to Ralph Millikan last night when he saw this. He said, "Wow, this is way better than CRISM." So for once, we can say something that we've got something better than Mars. So I'm pretty happy about that. The radiometric calibration, so this is cross-track, and this is by wavelength, and basically what we'll show here is that while we're at the equator, which is approximated by this measurements taken by the instrument at this blue line, our signal-to-noise is actually relatively high, and above 500 for much of the spectrum. And at the poles, with lower essentially counts, we're above at least 100 signal to noise, and actually the horizontal dashed lines represent what our baseline requirements are to meet our goals. And so in both at the equator and at the poles, we'll be having hopefully more than sufficient signal to noise. So again, at the poles, we should be able to get actually fairly good quality spectra for the polar regions, in addition to obviously the very excellent spectral information at the equator. Radiometric calibrated data shows a nice black body curve, so we're very happy and excited about what's to come. The uniformity of this instrument, again, said this before, we want to have a nice uniform spectrometer, avoiding spectral smile and keystoning, and we'll show that for a single band, so this is measurements at one of our wavelengths, between 714 and 715 nanometers across the detector, we're within one nanometer, a single nanometer of measuring our goal, or measuring our intended wavelength. So we're very excited. There's a slight keystone, but that's very minor and certainly within the specs of our instrument. So we also want to have across for each detector field of view uniformity. This shows that for each wavelength, we're all measuring at the same wavelength. For each detector, we're measuring at the same wavelength. So the instrument is checked out in the calibration stage very, very well. So we actually exceed our requirements, which is a good thing, of course. Status, this is the instrument as it's getting prepared to be shipped from JPL, sitting on the bench. How do you get an instrument from Pasadena, California to Bangalore, India? Stick it on an airplane, Singapore Airlines. Our instrument is inside this crate. It's wrapped in a red tape so that we could always pick it out. Rob Green got to sit on the flight deck on a flight from JPL to Amsterdam, Amsterdam to Bangalore. And here it is in Bangalore with the actual core of the spacecraft. The instrument recently, within the past few months, has been integrated onto the spacecraft. Here it is covered in, with its red protective covering. As of today, the spacecraft is actually, everything we've been told from ISRO is that the spacecraft is at the launch site, survived the 3-day trip from Bangalore to the launch site, and will be awaiting launch in a few days. Again, the instrument is relatively small, 8.3 kilograms, low power, small volume, exceptionally uniform, high signal to noise, and again, we'll be getting high spatial and spectral resolution. And another thing to keep in mind is this is a passive instrument with no moving parts, relatively simple design, not simple operations necessarily, but not too many operational modes. So the instrument has been developed and calibrated in 24 months. We were the last instrument selected for Chandrayaan-1 and the first to deliver. And we're ready to launch and pursue its two goals, both of science and exploration. And I've got some time for questions. Thank you very much. Absolutely, and I should note that that figure doesn't show some of the very, very smallest targets that were drawn. We've efforted to have a representation of all of the currently known mare compositional units, certainly across Western Procellarum, certainly some of the unique mare basalt flows in Procellarum. But if you want to suggest additional ones, we're more than happy. I mean, we will be adding targets as we get our global data, as we get our targeted data, to say, oh, well, this area is really interesting, we should make sure that we cover this region better than we have it now. So that's certainly not the final say. Oh yes, thank you. So that's not the final say of what we'll get, but it's our going in, I guess, going in best effort to get a good coverage of targeted sites. But if you want to suggest some additional ones, we can certainly sit down later today, tomorrow, or we can do this digitally as well.
Just got time for one more quick question.
Could you comment on how you're planning to integrate the ground truth?
Well, one of the things that we're definitely going to have to do is use our knowledge of at least the Apollo 16 site, and certainly all of the Apollo sites.